we are here with Laurie McKenna. He's been gracious enough to grant us some of his time at the end of the season. Joined by Dave, sitting here in his high-vis vest. Just got out of work. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Thank you, mate.
It's just so he stands out on the telecast.
Exactly right. And thanks very much, Laurie, for your time. We're just going to record a couple of minutes on Facebook Live just to give everybody a teaser as to what's going to come up in a couple of weeks. We'll release the full podcast in a few weeks. But we're just going to run a little live segment as we start off this podcast on Facebook Live, and hopefully everybody enjoys it, and that gets everybody interested and keeps things going for the off season. So, like I said, Laurie, thanks very much for joining us. Dave, did you want to kick off a question?
Yeah, so we've taken questions through various social medias, forums as well, because it's an opportunity for the fans to field you questions through us. The first question is from Wilso8948, and they'd like to know, they'd like to seek some clarification on the club's use of the visa spot, or intended use of the visa spot next year. With, I mean, we understand we've got the Chilean partnership with Audax Italiano, and the
Glenn. I can't see Dave. Is he wearing camouflage?
thank you, Glenn. And also,
at least people's watching.
Yeah, exactly. We've got two people watching at the moment.
And so. the Chinese, the desire for Martin Lee to have a Chinese player in the team. What are we looking to do? Does that limit us simply to three visa spots?
No. So we've got Wayne Brown, his contractor.
Yep. Coco's also a contractor.
Coco's contractor. Roy O'Donovan's a visa player, mm-hmm. so we've signed him. So there are two spots available. We have to have one Chinese, and I'll go on to something in a second. So we've got and one European, South American. So we have spoke to Audax Italiano about a potential Chilean player. They survive on transfer fees over there, so they're not going to give us one of their top 11, but potentially we could get somebody in that top 16, but is that for this year? I think we need to get a bit better than that this year for that final visa spot, rather than getting a squad player from Chile. On the Chinese player, that could be somebody from his club, Shenzhen Ledman it's called now. So it'd be a player that we selected, he came over, because obviously we could afford that player, because the Chinese players are, but another thing that got chucked in by one of the coaches who was applying for the job was, instead of just getting a squad player who's Chinese, like Lele, who was okay, well, let's get a marquee Chinese player who's an ex-national team player, maybe 28, 29, top player. He's going to come here for a couple of years, maybe look to get residency and stuff like that. So instead of looking maybe as a squaddy, let's look at maybe change it and look, well, instead of getting the big European player, who's a decent player, and obviously we're not going to be paying top that much, but going to pay this guy a fair bit of money, let's get a Chinese player. So it changes the slant on the Chinese. He's not just a squad player. He's actually a good player who's international experience.
I suppose it was people more wanting to know whether those two overseas positions were locked away, one Chinese, one Chilean, and there weren't going to be
one Chinese and then
four others.
Depending on where, and then we've got three, so there's basically one spot left open. Where the coach sees that position needed. Is a centre half, is another striker, is a number 10.
Are we looking at keeping the visa players that we currently have?
The contractor, but maybe we will offer some of them a potential if they could find another club an option to go.
Depending on what the new coach is and whether they want to, they think they fit in.
So that would be a talk with them. If they said, look, if we could get X, could we move him on? Then it's a phone call and say, if you can find a club we're away, we might help facilitate a move for you.
Cool. All right. So in addition to that question, AJ asked, are we looking at overseas-based Australian players struggling for game time or out of contract? Two names that got thrown up were Burns and Milligan. Both spent time at the Jets and fit this criteria. And he's sure that there's plenty of others that are, overseas but not seeing the game time that they should. Is there opportunities for us to bring any of those Australian players back and look to add them to our team as first-team players rather than just squad fillers?
I think Milligan had been playing. He might have got injured. He had been playing. Nathan Burns has not been playing much at all. Depending on a new coach, we'll definitely be looking at that. Depends, because it's only fair now that the new coach comes in and picks his players. It's definitely going to be players that we bring those names up,
yep,
because we know they possibly want to come back here. And then it'll just depend budget-wise, new coach, what he wants, what we've got to spend. Because we're in the process of finalising a budget for Martin. But then obviously Mark Jones is gone, a new coach has come in. So now we've signed Roy O'Donovan, we've got Gillespie and the two young boys, so we've got four there. And we reckon there could be another, depending on what squad players, current boys out of contract get kept, it depends how many new players come in. But we are definitely, we've got all those players listed.
Yep.
Did you want to provide us with an update on the coaching situation while we're broadcasting?
We were hoping to try and announce something this week. Now with the grand final and that, things going between China, Europe and getting the time difference and being able to talk to people, because obviously they're Aussie candidates, you know, the ones are well documented. You've got Ernie Merritt, you've got Mulvey's, you've got Rudin's name's chucked in there, you know, the Miletic's name is chucked in. Gombau's name, you know, and these guys, half these guys never put into the job because of contractor. But we are getting very close, and I would say probably Tuesday next week. If we go out on Monday, if it's all done over the weekend, the grand final is going to gobble it up, so we probably look to get it done on Tuesday.
That's exciting.
No, it's positive way, whatever way it goes, that's the next step then. The next step is that coach has to give his advice on out of contract players, because we want to be fair with them.
Yep.
If he's wanting to keep any of them, well, we start negotiating with them straight away, and then identify what players. But all the coaches who have, I don't like to call it a shortlist, they've all been watching our games and know our games and been looking at players and stuff, so they're getting them up to speed.
Yeah. All right. So, Saw Footballer asked, will we be using all of the salary cap concessions? So I think they're talking about
homegrown talent,
long-term players.
There are a number.
Marquees. There's a number of different salaries. I think that's probably been an area of opportunity the Jets haven't used in.
No, we did last year.
More than we usually have, yeah. But we didn't have a marquee
last year. No marquee last year. There could have been a marquee Christmas when Martin Lee made available. So we could have put our highest paid player, which is like Coco or one of these guys, as a marquee, because yep, there are no restrictions. And we had extra money to spend at Christmas, but I had to be an Aussie player.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find, we spoke to Scott McDonald, we thought we were close to getting Bridgie, until he broke his leg. So, and then all the other boys we spoke to were all boys who weren't playing. And they weren't playing for a reason, they either were playing shit or they were injured. So we could have done that. Last year we did use concessions on Ben Kennedy, a lot of the local boys with concessions on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we were under the salary cap last year. But we used concessions, and the concessions would have put us probably slightly over the salary cap if we take the concessions in. This year I would envisage the salary cap is going to be from 2.6 roughly to 2.9. Mm-hmm. Obviously the clubs are in dispute with FFA about the money, and the walkout wasn't really a walkout, it was more like meeting's finished, nothing else to talk about,
yep,
we'll leave. We'll spend over the salary cap this year. So whether we have a marquee, yeah, we probably would put our highest paid player as a marquee, because then it helps us, because Martin, he said he'll invest more money.
All right, well, that's a good place to leave the Facebook live broadcast. So thanks very much, guys, and
keep an
eye out for the full podcast out in a couple of weeks. All right, that's done. Okay, so we'll continue on.
So that was just for that bit?
That was, yeah, so that's just the first couple of minutes.
So that's gone through to Facebook.
That's gone through to Facebook.
No, live one, yeah.
Mm.
All right, good.
Yeah, cool. All right, Dave?
Next question is, this is a question that came up both from PV4 and Saw Footballer again, and they want to ask how the club undertakes their scouting. Do we have a scouting network out there, or how are we looking to invest in one, or how does the club undertake their due diligence when they're looking at a player?
Is this players that we're going to sign?
Yeah, we're potentially earmarking for signatures, or even just scout going. Do we go to NPL games or other games and scout?
We don't have as such scouts. We have obviously I've got a network of people who I've trusted over the years and signed a lot of players from. Mark Jones was the same, Scott Miller was the same. The new coach come in will have his own network, so they're not scouts, it's just a network of people who you trust in football, in their opinion. And now that Joe Griffiths is involved in the club, Joe's connected with all the Socceroo boys, or the ex-Socceroo boys. So between when you get a head coach, Joe, the club, us playing in the NPL, we've got a reasonable grasp on who the good young ones, because there's a fair bit of jump. We look at it from the NPL, we want boys who are playing 17 to maybe 19 in the first team with NPL in the top league. They maybe have a wee chance of coming in as that under 20 spot. If a boy's 25, 26, 27, he's doing okay in the NPL, he's probably going to struggle. Boys overseas, we would always, because it's too easy now, we get YouTube, we get all these highlight, we've got My Scout, so, which is one of these programs you put in, you pay a subscription, we can get all the match details of anybody, most basically anywhere in the world. So you can actually sit and watch footage of their games, so you actually get a view. But then we would always then check up. So if it's a Scottish player, I would make a phone call to a few people that I know who would then give me the honest opinion player. If it was the UK, Joe Griffiths might have a better network. So we do go through a fair bit a background before you actually sign a player. But no scouts.
Okay.
The Central Coast Mariners set that up about 2 years ago. I think maybe Bobby Newmoff was one at one stage, and it was just a token thing that all these people were scouts, but nobody actually done anything.
Yeah.
Is it an actual area of opportunity that maybe can be investigated down the track? Because I know it's not necessarily employing. I know there are scouting networks that other clubs tap into. There's people that do scouting for other clubs, like a multitude of clubs, not just specific to one specific club. Is there networks that we can possibly tap into down the track for people that are actually employed as scouts and will be able to provide more in-depth?
See, for us, for the market in Australia, and this is just my opinion as being an ex-coach, and if we had one scout in Australia who, for an A-League club to employ a scout, is you just couldn't justify. He'd be going to a game Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that'd be his job. Somebody who is in the coaching ranks, his job, that when I was coaching, if I played on a Friday night, I would come up to Newcastle on Saturday, I might fly to Melbourne on Saturday, I'd go and watch, I'd go to state league games, I would physically want to see these players. If I got recommended through my networks, I'd go and watch them. So I think there's an opportunity down the track as the club stabilises and we're not burning money at both ends, that somebody who's, we're playing Sydney FC next week. Okay, he's not looking at any players, but he's actually looking at the game face to face. He's there live. You get it all on TV, but you don't get everything on TV. Yeah. So scouting included with match preparation, I think, is possibly something that we could look at down the track.
Cool. Your next question.
All right, yeah. So the next question was something I had and was sort of tied in with a conversation I had with a previous CEO a couple of seasons ago, Mitchell Murphy. He was only in the job for a short period of time, and this was in the aftermath of Nathan Tinkler being removed and the FFA taking over. He was very perturbed or concerned that the club at that point in time didn't have a set of values, that the club built the culture and built their whole ethos around. And that's what I've seen a major area of opportunity for this club, and has been a major failing, I think, over the last 10 years. We're recruiting coaches based on who's the best available at that point in time, rather than sorting out the club from a culture and an ethos and a values point, and then recruiting players and recruiting a coach to fit that. So that way, when a coach maybe doesn't work out as well as expected, the continuity is there, the players are recruited underneath this values and ethos, but we don't end up having to chuck the baby out with the bathwater like what happened with Scott being sacked and then Mark coming in and having a whole bunch of players that aren't necessarily going to fit the system if we hire a coach that's actually going to be of a similar vein but maybe more experienced along the similar ethos and mindset and playing style that the club wants to establish in the club and on the playing field.
Sure.
maybe that's an area of opportunity. What are your thoughts on that?
The club's got a set of values, absolutely. They've been pretty, quite hidden away. I think we'll be doing maybe the 4th of July, off the top of my head. We're going to have a training day, which is for the admin staff and for the football staff, which will be the first time that we've ever, and it's actually to get what is the core values of this club. If you ask the player would go, what are you talking about? What's the core values? I'm here to play football, I'm a footballer. Mm. So to have the admin and the footballers in the same room, because as of June we moved to next to training venue, we moved to Transgrid, was out there today, it's all come along well. That's going to be a huge step together to be in one football club.
Yeah.
Whether you're a football player or you're a physio or you're an admin person, you're part of this club. And a fan, you're part of the club.
So that's out near Ray Watt Oval at
Callaghan. Right now, 50 metres.
Yeah.
Walk out the door and you're actually watching them train, which is going to be a great step forward as a culture of a club, because I don't think, in my opinion, we've really got a culture that I see. We've got a group of players who get on reasonably well, but at the end they're dying for each other week in, week out. I don't think they are, and you don't want to get a culture when you've actually, everybody's in this together as a one. And at the moment, I don't think we are, because when we came in, you had an admin building in the city with a nice view, but you can't park and it's not accessible to fans. So we're fixing that. So that's one thing. So we're going to get our club values from the players and the staff that everybody's on the same page. To get one with the, I've got my idea of what I think the club values are between what the fans want. I think I've got a good feeling of that from before I came here. Because you just want a team that's going to work hard for each other, play for the town, play with a heart and sleeve. It's a core stuff, but they want to win games and they want to play good football. But the style of football, I'll argue that if we were playing shit at the end of last season, when we were winning the last couple of games to get in the top six, the 9,000 average fans who were turning up at that game would have been 10 or 11 or 12 or 13, 14. They would not be caring the style of football. It's about winning the games. Mm. And I'll touch on Sydney. Sydney this season haven't they always been pretty, but are they effective? They're effective, and they have broke every record. You look at the stats, they're mid-table with everything, but goal scoring and goals conceded, they've been. So I think I kind of get the grasp of where you're coming from, and I think we can slowly get there. We're not going to get there for a wee while, because I know where you're going, but I think we're starting. We've identified that we need to be together as a football club and an admin and the fans. We need to be more engaged, which I think we have been this year, but still think we've a long way to go.
And I think it ties in with the recruitment of the coach and why people didn't want another rookie coach coming in, because we needed an appointment of a coach who's established and will be able to shape that sort of thing that you can't really expect a rookie coach in their first year.
When you see a coach walking in that door, you go, oh.
Yeah.
The respect for the player, the coach, is straight away, you go, the coach doesn't need to prove himself because his record speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's what we've identified. And, you know, there were a lot of coaches' names chucked in there, but then you go, well, have they actually coached first grade? Have they actually coached in the A-League or a top league overseas?
Yeah. And I mean, that's been the problem, because Gary Van Egmond version 1 to Gary Van Egmond version 2, Branko Collina, Phil Stubbins, Mark Jones, Scott Miller, it's all been different.
Yeah.
And that I think we did get some modicum of success when we had Ian Crook as our high performance manager for a period of time. He wasn't there all that long, but he was sort of handling that recruitment and was sort of between the CEO and the coach, and helping sort of guide the football, more of a director of football, I think, more than anything else, or a sporting director, if you want to use European type. Is there an opportunity for the club maybe to look at that?
Joe Griffiths does a bit of that role. So Joe's, obviously because we don't actually have a full-time football manager, Joe's doing some of the contract work negotiations. I do the other ones, and again, because an agent deals with me because I know him, or he'll deal with Joe because Joe's new and he knows them. Like, he's dealing with agents now who he played with in Europe, so he's got a different network from what my network is. So Joe's doing a bit of that, and Joe and myself, because I've got coaching background, the new coach comes in, they know I was a coach, and I don't never cross that line, but I'll give them an opinion if I'm asked an opinion. That's what happened with Jonesy, and my opinion was often different from Jonesy's, and it wasn't right or wrong, it was just
it's his way.
That was his way and that was my way. Mm. It's his job. Because I would never cross that line. Because where you get to in Europe, the sporting directors overrule the coaches sometimes. And in my opinion, why should the coach get sacked when the sporting directors help and dictate what the team is going to play and stuff like that, when it's the coach that gets sacked and the sporting director smoking a cigar and still got the job?
Yeah. I think it's probably more along the lines of it's not all on the coach.
Oh, no,
because
no,
I think that's maybe a problem with Australia, because we have a CEO and a coach, but the coach has so much stuff on there. Because not very much backroom stuff.
After Jonesy was in the job maybe a couple of months. Jonesy was in the job maybe a couple of months, and he would not mind you telling this. He was like, it's not an easy job.
Yeah.
It's not an easy job.
No.
And you've got a lot on your plate and a lot of stuff coming in there all the time and always thinking, and then if you're not getting the results, you start second guessing yourself, and it's a hard gig.
Alright. Mate, so that's some questions around the playing squad, those sorts of things. I guess we'll go on to more club related questions now. Borat asked, what do you see as your biggest achievement since taking on the role?
I look back at the end of the season, I think we've done a lot of good things, and I just think it's been a big flop, because 6 weeks out, we're going to have the best season for 6 years, 7 years, and then we've got the wooden spoon. Mm. So I don't think, I can't give myself a rap for anything. A lot of people might say I've done this good and I've done that good. And I think I've engaged reasonably well and I've went around and about.
Certainly active on Twitter.
Oh, no, I went quiet on it. Unless you've got something to talk about and you don't want to fall out, because obviously there are a lot of active people on social media up here, and I'll go on social media when people have got it wrong, and I'll politely say that's not the facts, that's not right, because it's easy to chuck bombs, chuck a wee hand grenade when you don't know the background. So,
Stay away from the Herald comment section.
I've never even went in a loop. Yes. So to come up and say to me, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying anything, because I'm gutted that where the club finished, you know, and I know I'm not the coach, but that reflects the full organisation. Everybody, as I told the players when Mark Jones went, I said, this affects everybody here. This affects me, it affects everybody. I hate it. I'd love to be on social media bashing people because they're wrong and we're winning games. I love it. And I would love to front people who I know bag the shit out of us when we start going well, and just say, well, give us a wee bit of time.
Yeah.
And I'll do that politely and respectfully. But I think us moving the offices for here to Ray Watt is going to be a huge thing for the club. Whether I'm here or not here long term, it's going to be, financially it's great deal for the club. But to bring the organisation together, we're one organisation, we'll be a lot stronger for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it's the beginning of the season, when we're looking to now organise overseas tours, and getting that exposure overseas.
Well, that's happening again. We'll be going back to, so we're going to China with the young boys in July. We've got the two boys in Portugal playing away just now in the second division, and then we're going back. Martin just confirmed this morning we're going back there in August to play 3 games in China, and we engaged the 3 clubs who came here to the Hunter, spent over $600,000. Ren was lower budget, they were in Newcastle, and then we had the 2 Super League clubs out of Cypress Lakes, training at Cessna, playing local teams, are playing against Robbie Cruz, an international, James Holland, former international. You know, it's not a bad gig.
Yeah, look, see, I think if there's one thing that you can probably take away as a positive, I think that that you backed it up.
Hmm.
You potential players that are coming here are looking at that going, well, geez, we're actually an opportunity of getting some exposure in China, where there is a lot of money. So I think, in terms of achievement, that the club have established those links, and that as a standard of operation is a good thing. I'll ask the next question, and I think it's a very intelligent question. I asked it.
keep yourself all right.
the Jets are known, and as you mentioned in the last pod, that we have one of, if not the smallest administrative team, football and backstaff in the league. After being in the job for 9 months, or thereabouts, and getting to know them and how the club operates, do you think that we are operating at the right level of staff, or will we be looking to expand our backroom and football staff in the off-season?
The last season, the season just gone past, is the most that the club's ever spent on backroom staff, medical and stuff like that. So it's the most we've spent on the records that we've got. So we think we've got the full-time fitness guy, with the video analysis guy, with obviously Justin with the part-time physio. So we, that was the most we spent, and it went really smoothly. It went well. Admin staff were on the low end as well. We've rejiggled, so some people have left through because of getting other jobs and want to move on, and we've new ticket manager, we've just employed, which is a new position. We had a part-time marketing person, which is now going to be full-time marketing and graphic design. So instead of us going out spending a lot of money getting all the graphic work, we can actually do it in-house. We've got another body here. There'll be another person starting in, because we're taking over the Merging Jets in the W League, so we're going to need more admin resources to make sure that runs. You know, you're going to have 11 teams in the Merging Jets and a W League team, and we need to make sure the W League team's getting looked after the same as everybody else, because it should be. So we'll have more staff, but we're not going to be overstaffed, because some clubs, I heard one of the clubs say the other day they've got rid of 5 people. But I know that they had about 20 people in the office before that, you know what I mean? So we would be on the low end, I think, us in Wellington. But if we can do it effectively, we're better having people who are working hard and enjoying their job and mucking in than having people sitting back, sitting about, yeah, poor, because you hear people, I want an assistant, I want this. Okay, what's your assistant going to do? Can you do what your assistant's going to do? Have you got time for that? It's time management. Mm. So at the moment, when the season starts, we'll have more staff now because it's the off season. And the football, we'll be looking, depending who gets a job, some coaches want assistant coach gone, bring in their own. Another assistant coach, goalkeeper, they want to come in and clean out everything. They want to bring in. Some want, happy to keep what you've got. It's good. Justin's doing a good job. Van Stratton's a great goalkeeping coach. Chris, the new fitness guy's come in and done. But all these contract talks are on hold now because what's happened? And that's just life now. We can't commit to somebody because it's not fair. So the levels, it's always great to have more. My background coming from the Central Coast is we never had half of what we've got here. Mm. Training facilities are great. There've been a couple of coaches, potential coaches, been out there for a look and went, this is decent surface, everything, it's looking great, the facilities, but it would be good to get a little bit more. Mm. Which is what we can't go for here. When the club's losing money, we can't go for there to there.
Yeah.
Because my worry is at the moment, okay, we want another 100 grand here and 100 grand here. I'm worried it'll come off a playing budget. Mm. So at the moment, my focus is trying to get as much money as possible for the playing budget, get by everywhere else, and focus to get a team on the park that the punters are going to be proud of and we get in that top six.
I know one of our fellow podcast contributors is always keen, and we're always pushing, suggesting that maybe sports psychologists might be an idea to maybe help along the lines of getting the players in the right mindset and trying to stave off some of those form dips. And is that an area of opportunity that maybe you might be able to add to the coaching staff down the track?
It's been meant that would just be somebody on as a consultant, which sometimes you get people who put up, say, I want to sponsor the club, and that's something that comes down to the coach.
Yep.
Me putting back 7 years when I was a coach, I'd look at people in the restroom who thought I needed a psychic, but I would punt them for the team if they were a problem. And if they weren't a problem, you would deal with them, man-manage them, because it's a big bit of man-management. But I know Arnie's kind of, I think Arnie's got into a sports psychologist this year, and he said that's helped. And so you never say never, but it's just, is that once day a week you come, or is that when the boys have got the phone number? It's setting up what's right for the club.
Yeah.
And because to me it's quite a confidential thing. You can come and have a group thing, but if I'm going to see a psychologist, I don't want to be telling too many players.
Yeah. You know,
so, but no.
Well, it depends how it's promoted.
And it depends the players as well, because sometimes we had an evaluation on players. We met most of the players who were contracted here last week. And the big thing we say is, players, if you get anything, because a couple of them had things that were just eating at them a wee bit, well, you're not going to play well. You have to speak to Clayton Zane, speak to Joe Griffiths, speak to me. If you don't feel comfortable, speak to head coach. You cannot let things build up. You must have a clear mind when you're going to play. Don't let things bug you. Come and see us, we'll fix it.
Yeah.
And that's what we told every player that. And that's a genuine thing, because I'm a firm believer, it doesn't matter what job you do, if you're happy at your work, you'll work better. If you're not happy at your work, you're not going to work better. And if you're a football player, you're definitely not going to be comfortable in what you do. Mm-hmm.
Right, just give us an idea of when you need to look at wrapping things up, because we're about halfway through. So I know we only needed you for half an hour. But
no, my wife, she's coming to pick me up.
Okay.
I've not got my scooter today. My knee thing.
You need Segways. You need one of those Segways.
Now I've got one of those invalid scooter knee things.
All right. Next question. Sambo Crawley asks, now that the Jets have, and you sort of partially answered this, but now the club's taking over the emerging Jets and W League teams, is there going to be any changes in their structure, investment and training bases? Will they be all based at Ray Watt, or are they going to be at a couple? Obviously, the emerging Jets would probably be at football.
Great question. It's not as easy just taking over the Mers. So we're waiting on Northern New South Wales giving us a costing for the emerging Jets to stay there. We have tried to get the W League to come to Ray Watt, but just with all the other things going in there, it was a bit hard, so we've just done a new 2-year deal for Ray Watt. His relationship's going great. We've got the training facilities, the office facilities. But to get the deal done now, we had to leave the W League out. So we're now looking at a couple other venues, possibly. The W League could be their own home. The emerging Jets is an issue because where can you get 2 or 3 fields that are going to be able to train and play? So.
Yeah.
We're waiting, and Northern New South Wales coming back to us with a costing on them being still based at Northern.
Okay, cool.
For those that don't know, the club do have a members advisory group. What do you see, having been to a few of those meetings now,
I've been to them all.
A few. That's true. That is very true. What do you see the advantages that it brings to the club and the role of that group is going to play in the future?
I get pizza. Bring in pizza for the partners. Now, look, it's a cross-section of fans, so you've got the younger ones, you've got the older ones, and you've got the ones in the between, and you've got people with a different view on things, which is because I look at things, when there's a coach and a player, I look at things as I was a fan, and I still do. I'll always look at, how would I see that as a fan? But I'm a fan now who's 55, who has got my views on stuff. And some of the people in the meeting who's a lot older than me, they've got totally different views. We talked about the love, the lightweight scarf you got in the members pack. But the feedback we got from the members, half the people loved it and half the people hated it. So it was a real mixture. So when you chuck all the ingredients in, it's like cooking a cake.
Yeah.
And you hopefully get an outcome. So I know they're looking for some people to fill those positions as well. But it's a chance for them to express their opinion as well as their friend's opinion. Because when I first came to meet, I said, whose opinions is this? Is this their opinion or is this their group's opinion? And it's meant to be, for what I believe is, it's a general, because they associate, they sit, they know people, they know families. It's an overall view. So it's not an individual view, it's an overall view. So it's a great opportunity for somebody to actually think, because some things that come up, we don't think, I go, shit, because sometimes you focus so much on what's in front of you and dealing with the day-to-day problem, you don't actually look at the big picture. So sometimes it's very informative as well. So if people are interested in that, it's worthwhile getting in touch.
We're sure that, as you said, there are some spots to fill on it, and the Jets, I'm sure you guys will put out the application process in the coming weeks.
Because when I done my council stuff, there are always people whinge. One person said to me, what the hell did you become the mayor for? I said, why not? I said, do you complain a lot about what happens at council? They do, yeah. Do you do anything about it, apart from your wins? They go, no. I said, well, I'm doing something about it. And he went, fair call. You know, so, and don't, people outside might not like what some of the people are saying, but at least these people are giving up their 2 or 3 hours every 2 or 3 months to come in and talk football and talk Jets. It's a commitment.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of an ownership as well. I would feel quite proud because it's a bit of ownership. You're doing something.
It's been going for 3 years now, so good.
All right. PV4 asked another question. Where did the idea originate to have the reciprocal ticketing arrangements with the Central Coast? He wanted to praise those who got it off the ground and asked whether it's likely to be expanded to include Sydney and or Western Sydney.
It was all my idea. Bullshit, wasn't it? Now, that was all done with the FFA and David from before.
Yep.
Great initiative. Nothing's being spoken about doing Western Sydney or Wanderers. I don't think we get any buy-in. We work closely with the Cove this year to give them, because they come up in certain cheaper numbers tickets. For the first game, we give them cheaper tickets, and they've done the same for us. Definitely the Mariners, yes, because then obviously next. So the first game they brung up 937, and they brung obviously other fans up. I reckon they'd have 1,300 people that first game, which was the biggest since I was coaching.
Yeah, back in season four, I think.
Definitely. So the second game they come up with 600 odd, which is still good.
Yep.
Add it to the atmosphere. We went down, and I never pushed it that much because obviously we were in a rut and we were only doing well, but we still take over 600 members down there, which is great. Next year, we're going to have 14 home games, so we're not taking a game away. We have, just for the record, and nobody else, it's not been spoken, we have been offered to take games away.
Yep.
We've been offered cash to take games interstate as a home game. We've been offered many things to take away games, and we've said no. So we've got 14 home games, 2 Mariners games. So we're actually going to have 16 home games this year, and we could slug and put the prices up. Yeah, that's not been decided, but I'll guarantee you, well, not guarantee you, but I'm just saying, it's they're not looking to put up any prices. This year, I think, was 12 home games and the Coffs game, if you remember, so 13, plus the Mariners game was 14. So we're going to increase the value of the membership this year and hopefully keep the prices the same. But a great initiative for whodunit. I think it's something we can build, because I would love us to go down there. Their record's 937. The first game we go there next year to take 1,000, 1,500 like the old days.
Yep.
Get a bus.
Like, get a few buses.
Yeah.
a minibus.
Yeah. I think we'll probably just move on from those questions and now talk about the kit. Because BLK, I guess, have gone into administration. They've had difficulties. And this was something that happened during the year. There are a number of brands that were being considered in the media at the time, I think. But when are we looking to announce a kit supplier or who's going to provide us with gear?
We spoke to a few of the big brands. They were interested. We were in deep talks with a company called Yukan, which was the Chinese mob, and a few of the other, we had BLK wanted to stay on. We had a lot of interest, which was great. Puma as a brand was good mix. They were going to give us our training and playing equipment, the contract agreement, which is worth between 150 and 200 grand. That was it. Some bonuses for finals. Most of them were the same. The Chinese came in and offered us a shitload of money. And you have to go, wow, we're taking us to the top three in the country. So gear, some cash, a good brand. I know the brand. So went down a track with that, but that was really difficult. But we've came really close to agreeing with a new company. They're going to give us a good deal. They're going to give us some cash, and they're going to give us the gear. They're an Australian company who are going to, we are their only A-League football team, we're their marquee sponsorship, and they're going to invest in the marketing of that brand. So we'll be looking to announce probably when the season, first training session around about there, when we have the training gear, because it's a rushed thing now, so we'll have the training gear, we'll make the announcement, and we'll wear, it will not be the match playing, we'll look to around about September, launch the new kit for next year, as having a members function, having some kind of members function, so it's a big hoo-ha that you can. We're launching a strip that's actually for sale, blah blah blah, so we can get that in a bit. So it's going back to one of the questions earlier. It's a huge thing when you have a sponsorship deal where you get gear, but you're actually getting gear in cash, which puts you in with the big boys, is a big achievement.
All right. One of the, would you want to move down to this one, or would you want to go for here?
Yeah, go for that.
All right, so Bosmanort wanted to, a little bit more of a, given the damage done to the Jets brand after poor results over a decade, mismanagement from various administrations, Do you think it's worth rebranding the team other than to something other than the Jets? Has that been discussed at all? Or changing away from Knights colours just to maybe give the brand a bit more of a refresh or a restart?
Since my time in the 9-10 months, never been mentioned about the Jets. One thing that came up today, and I'll just, while we're talking, I'll look at an email, because I thought, not with the colours, because the fans, I know they've done surveys and that last year, and we'll go back to green and the gold, and I think for the foreseeable future over the next couple of years, because obviously we need to get a new sponsorship deal, the colours will stay the same, it's too late. The changing the name, I don't think would be a possibility, because obviously you start with FFA stuff. But one thing that came up today, a guy was at our, Richie Williams, who's a sponsor of the club, and he's been a great sponsor, club ex-player of football. He was at our lunch with the Rangers Club on Wednesday, which 170 people, was a great day. He had a guy with him who deals with businesses and builds brands, and together we can soar. Well, to me, it doesn't mean a lot to me, you know, it's not. And that guy just said, well, together we can, which means, yeah, well, if we all got together and if we all tick these boxes, yeah, we can soar together. He just says, why is it not together we soar? Because we should be together. So a little thing like I looked at that this morning, went, he's wrote an interesting thought, and I went, that is an interesting thought, because together we can soar doesn't mean nothing to me, but together we soar, together we achieve things. We will not achieve nothing unless the keyboard warriors who hammer us, the fans who support us, the players, the staff are all on the same page. And I definitely believe that. And once you start winning games, you'll get the keyboard warriors will start coming back to the fold. But even then, you still hammer us,
yeah,
even when we're winning. So you're not going to change that. But the majority of fans, club, we're feeling the same heartbeat, whatever, that we're here. I know you're bleeding. I know you're bleeding. Mm. Does the players know we're bleeding? Maybe not. One player was totally embarrassed when we had the talk in here. Totally embarrassed with season. There were 16 players interviewed, you know. It was, to me, it's another season. Well, it's not another season. It's 7th or 8th season since qualify for the finals. And we probably copped, and we deserve to cop flat. I have no problem, because we faded the season badly. But we copped up a lot of flat, because the last 6-7 years, the frustration's building up. And then we sacked the coach, and Miller got sacked, and it was all compounded on us at the end, and we have to take it.
Yeah. Well, that pretty much answered that one as well.
So, we've got a friendly coming up.
Yep.
In July.
July the 8th, my birthday.
How convenient.
Very convenient.
What sort of lineup will Audax look to bring out? Are they going to bring a full-strength lineup?
Full team. They're using this. Their pre-season cup starts when they go back, so it's important build-up for them. So, at the moment, they'll bring a full team. I watched them. They got beaten the day I watched them. But the boy who they sold for $1.5 million the season before scored a hat-trick against them. So, but they develop players. They're not one of the big clubs, but they're a club that's always batting near the top. But they rely on selling players every year. They're a decent team, you know. They few foreigners, few Brazilians, Uruguayans in the team, but they're not a ball about good football. Hold the ball up, like, for guys, your traditional Chilean isn't he the biggest man in the world? You know, he's 5'6" and holds the ball up amazingly well. Great touches, skillful. Now they'll bring the full team, so they're looking to play 2 games, I think. I've put them in touch with Wellington, so looking to come in here, playing a game, and then stopping off in Auckland and the way back, playing Wellington and going back to Chile. So,
exciting.
Victor from Perth, who's the guy who's the match agent, who's, because we don't often get a chance to play a pre-season game in Newcastle.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a match guy, and hopefully we get a reason. The pre-ticket sales are okay, but if we can get 5,000-6,000 people, you know, it's going to make it worthwhile for them. The game's going live into Chile. So they're going to televise the game, and it's going live into Chile, because the clubs in Chile own the TV rights and own the TV channel. So they get the distribution very similar to us from that channel. So I think it's a great opportunity. It's a bit early, you know, it's only, we're coming back on the 26th, so we're going to have two and a half weeks training. But boys go away with a pre-season programme, you play half, you play 45 minutes, you know, they'll swap the players over. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity. You know, the, I think the 35, 40,000 Chileans in Sydney. So I think the first day they sold 300 tickets. Well, usually at a Jets home game on a Friday, you wouldn't have sold 300 tickets. You'll sell more on that day and the next day. So there's a bit of interest there.
And plus, it's going to be good preparation finally for our FFA Cup game. Yeah. It's going to take place in mid-July. So. Yeah.
Take place where?
Mid-July, August.
30 minutes, stadium.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's, there's three dates in July. Mm. We don't know that till later.
Yeah.
So obviously, with that, if we last year when we get beat for victory, we actually played quite well that night, and Brownie scored a great goal. We got done, but we might look at something like maybe taking, if we get a home game, take the game to Cessnock. You know, take the game close, but. We always go to Magic, well, Cessna Council, they want us to go there, they want to put on the games, which would be great, because a lot of fans come from Cessna to here. So we looked at, we even thought about that for taking an A-League game away, let's go to Cessna, because you maybe get 7,000-8,000 people in there, it would be, well, it coughs, they'd 8,000.
Yeah, and it's not a 5-hour trip.
Yeah, but it doesn't, it only holds about 6.
Yeah.
So probably just too small, but that's maybe a possibility. We'll play pre-season games there, but maybe take an FFA Cup then. And the other big thing for pre-season, Stephen just mentioned it, we'll be looking to play a lot of the Premier League clubs. Because we're better training in the game than flogging the boys on the field. The boys are bored at the mind. We need to engage more with players. And you talk about scouting, they're nothing better than playing against Edgeworth, and you look and go, how good's he? Let's invite him in for a couple of weeks. You know, so...
Okay. All right. Final two questions. We'll quickly wrap it up because you've obviously given us a great deal of your time. We really appreciate it. Second last question. New Guns asked, these are obviously two semi-serious questions. When are we finally going to see full-strength beer being served in the stadium again?
Well, I drink Shandy, so I can't really talk about beer. That's a stadium.
That ends the interview.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Half and half. VB, half and half.
Oh, God.
That definitely ends it.
Yeah, Jesus.
That's a stadium, you know, they deal with all that stuff, we can't, it's
everything.
Nicky's just walked in here. No, we've got one more question,
Okay.
Now Nicky's just left the office.
Live updates.
the beer thing's, same. I know it's serious for some, but... it's not really, that's out of our control.
Yeah, so there's no opportunity for the Jets to have any sort of input on catering deals for specific to Jets games. It's all done as a stadium.
It's a stadium deal. So drinks, they do individual drink contracts.
Yep.
Every stadium does different deals with different suppliers. That's all state government.
Okay.
And the last one is from MFKS.
Highly important question.
Highly important question. Last pod you were queried about something that's very highly important. That subject being the jet-shaped hats. You committed to, we think it was 500 minimum order. If we could get 100 or 200 names or something like that, you'd hold stock. We haven't been able to find a supplier as of yet, and there has been research.
Well,
I'm sure you've got a supplier over in
China.
Yeah. No, but the guys we were just speaking to there about supplying our kit, we happened to mention we get about 8,000 members packs, and they went, we do all that stuff. There, and if you can give me a picture, I'll send it to them straight away, and I'm sure they'll be able to, because he can get anything he says.
Alright, so the challenge has been set.
Email some mock-ups to podcast@newcastlefootball.net.
No, because our new supplier, he said doing those packs was like easy.
Jet-shaped hats are on their way.
Oh, awesome. All right, Laurie, really appreciate...
Well, look at Molly Meldrum.
Spray painted gold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, rambling for 20 minutes on national TV. Mate, really appreciate you giving us your time. You gave us half an hour and you spent an hour with us, so you've answered all the questions. Really appreciate it. We hope everybody's enjoyed this episode, and we will speak to you soon.
Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!